inspiring, bold, progress, movement. These are just a few words that come to mind when I think about all of the collective action happening in the streets, on the picket lines, and on the shop floor. Working people in Oregon and across this country are fed up with a rigged economic system that isn't working for them, and they're doing something about it. Unions are gaining in popularity at levels not seen in 50 years. More workers are taking bold action at work than at any time since the 1980s. It's exciting, it's important, and it gives me a lot of hope for what working people can accomplish when we stand together. I'm Graham Traynor, Oregon AFL-CIO President, and you're listening to The Voice of Oregon's Workers, a monthly podcast from the Oregon AFL-CIO. As the State Federation of Labor Unions in Oregon, we proudly represent over 300,000 working people in every facet of our state's economy, and we serve as a strong voice for all workers, whether they have a union on the job or not. We're here to bring you the stories every month about the people and the organizations who are changing what it means to stand together and build power for working people.
Welcome back to The Voice of Oregon's Workers. I'm Russell Sanders, your host and the Communications Director for the Oregon AFL-CIO. So much has changed in our lives since our last episode. We saw an absolute nail-biter of an election in Oregon for Democratic candidate for Secretary of State. And congratulations to Shamia Fagan for winning that very close race. We also saw a slew of wins of labor-endorsed candidates, and you can read about all the election results and more on our website, orafl-cio.org. This month, we're jumping into a topic many folks are following very closely, the massive wave of demonstrations, activism, and organizing that has spread across the globe under the banner of Black Lives Matter. In Oregon, we've seen over 20 consecutive days of incredible marches and demonstrations with no sign of slowing down. It feels like the calls for an end to police brutality and systemic racism are coming from more voices than ever before. The Oregon AFL-CIO, along with all of Oregon's labor movement, is proud to support these efforts in any way that we can. Our guest today is Lamar Wise, who's both an outspoken Black Lives Matter activist and organizer, as well as a staff member at Oregon AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Let's get into it. Lamar, can you please introduce yourself and tell our listeners about your work at Oregon AFSCME?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Lamar Wise. I use he, his pronouns. Thank you so much for having me on. In terms of what I do for AFSCME, I'm a political coordinator, so that means I handle, other folks handle AFSCME's politics, both local and statewide. That includes policy and legislative work, as well as campaign work, so helping to support our endorsed candidates around the state, making sure that they have resources and expertise available. Also, a large chunk of what I do is special projects. So whether that be the census, we have a census program, we have an organizer and training program, and we also contribute to a lot of the political tables in Oregon. And so I'm able to sit on those as well to represent workers.
That's fantastic. That's a lot of important work too, especially stuff around the census and those special projects that you're mentioning. That's good stuff. What did you do before working for Oregon AFSCME? What brought you to the labor movement?
Yeah. So actually right before I started working for AFSCME, I was the executive director for the Oregon Student Association. Quite honestly, there's a lot of similarities in terms of how the student association was run and how labor unions are run. First of all, being a member-led organization, that is one of the big things that really drew me to wanting to work for labor, wanting to actually do some work for working class folks and people who, you know, trying to make a living, trying to get good benefits, while also, you know, trying to thrive in their livelihoods. I felt like it was a good move in terms of the values that I have and the values of the labor movement, and also recognize that I want to contribute to a better progressive Oregon. And I think labor unions have been in a lot of ways a major pillar for the progressive movement here in Oregon. And so I really I jumped at the chance to be able to contribute to that, and especially like contribute to it in a way that would advance like racial and social justice. And I feel like I've been able to do a lot of that with my time with AFSCME so far.
That's great. When did you start at AFSCME?
February 1st of 2019.
Okay.
Yeah. Just last year.
That's great. So like I mentioned in the introduction, you've been a leader and an organizer in the inspiring and honestly just powerful protests happening in Portland under the Rose City Justice banner. Can you share with us what that's been like?
It's been wild, to say the least. I mean, the first couple of days of protests, I mean, just personally speaking, I was pretty beat down and sad. And I actually ended up going into hiding for a little bit. Then started to go out to the protests. I realized the protest was actually ran by a lot of like white folks. And so myself and a few other like young black organizers decided to try to take over one day, and it actually became Rose City Justice. So it basically grew overnight. I think we have close to, if not over 20,000 followers on Instagram, as well as the thousands of protesters that come out every night. It's been pretty intense, to say the least, mostly because there's a lot of folks involved, and we're wanting to make sure that the protests are connected to the policy conversations that are also happening. And the other decisions that are being made around, you know, Portland's budget, Multnomah County's budget, and statewide policies that are being discussed in the upcoming special session. The folks who have been participating, though, amazing. A lot of like fresh ideas, a lot of new folks who are coming into the organizing scene, which is also really, has been really awesome to watch. And a lot of political growth for folks as well. And so we've tried our best to use this opportunity to educate folks, especially folks in gentrified Portland, around police brutality and around what we're up against in pushing for a better budget for the city.
Right on. I like that idea of connecting the protest to the policy, both locally and statewide. That's a really powerful idea. What kind of community reaction are you having to the marches that you've been a part of?
Yeah, the reactions have been very positive, and I think we've had a lot of folks come out, and even while we're marching, you know, folks from their homes will come outside and actually will begin marching with us.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's been awesome to see the involvement as we take like different routes and as we continue to engage different parts of the city to actually, you know, be able to interact with folks. Not only that, we have also done different actions that include like, you know, we had a tweet action to the mayor. We've had a text action where we were able to send thousands of protesters the information that they needed to get in touch with the mayor or their city councilors. As well as making sure that folks that are protesting are also connected with different Black-led organizations, right? So we've been able to have speakers from different organizations come out, give their viewpoints of what's happening, and we actually have been able to promote and uplift a lot of like what the Portland African American Leadership Forum has been doing, Unite Oregon, as groups that have been really rooted in community. So the reaction has been positive and really responsive overall, I would say.
That's so good to hear. On the other side of things, how has law enforcement handled your marches? You know, we've seen some just really incredibly shocking and disturbing videos from around the country, some testimonies from folks as well about peaceful protests being met with this military style gear and the tactics that go along with it. What's it been like out on the streets in Portland?
Yeah. So I will say, I think things evolve as the night goes on. And I think it also depends on the location you're talking about. So like the times where we've marched like on the east side of Portland, we've actually we don't see a lot of police. There has been a whole lot of interaction with cops. We've been able to do a lot of our activities like nonviolently, and have been able to engage a lot of like the more like wealthy neighborhoods. I will say though, when we've been downtown and the folks downtown that also do actions and protests and demonstrate, they have been met with tear gas, rubber bullets. One of the nights I was out, actually a middle schooler got hit with a tear gas canister. I think this just highlights the issue of how much the police has been militarized and the tools that are at their disposal to try to control what's happening out on the streets. It's really concerning to me that we're allowed to use chemical warfare on our own residents when it comes to tear gas, but that is still an issue that I think like we're grappling with and trying to like figure out how to best solve in a policy space. But yeah, it's been a little bit rough.
I can imagine. And I mean, the something that's been, I think, on my mind, and I've heard it from nurses unions and other advocates for public health, is like, why, you know, one, tear gas is a chemical weapon agent, but also there's a pandemic right now with the respiratory illness, and it seems like that might not be necessarily the best thing to be using for crowd dispersal. But that's a whole nother conversation in and of itself. On the topic of COVID, you know, our country and every community within it still faces this pandemic, which is making it difficult for some folks, I think, to feel comfortable to come out and demonstrate and march in the streets. In some cases, if you're like immune compromised, you know, it's going to be impossible to put yourself in that kind of risk. How can people with those conditions who are, you know, feeling apprehensive about actually going out and physically being in these spaces, who still want to be allies or supporters of this movement, how can they help?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. Rosa Justice does live streams. So if you have Rosa Justice on Instagram, you could view that when the protest starts. Not only that, you have an opportunity to donate, right? Like a lot of Black-led organizations right now are over capacity because of the amount of activities that are happening, and a lot of the Black leaders and Black orgs are being overtaxed because folks are wanting to engage them more and bring them in, which is it's great that we're in a moment where, you know, we're seeking Black leadership. At the same time, that Black leadership also needs resources in order to actually, like, you know, support. And so if folks could donate to, you know, there's a Black Resiliency Fund that exists here in Oregon. the Portland African American Leadership Forum, Unite Oregon, great organizations that do political advocacy and are connected with the community. Rose City Justice as well. You know, we will use the funding that we have to continue to push for more actions and to continue to engage the greater public around police accountability. There's also, I want to say, ways for folks to engage politically, right? Like, we need folks to be in touch with their legislators, their city councilors. That is still another way to fight back and let them know that it's time for us to reimagine, like, what safety looks like. And it's time to take the lead of the Black leaders in the community and the Black orgs that have been doing this work for decades. Those are the main ways that I think folks could pitch in.
Fantastic. Yeah. What I'll do is I'll drop links to all those different groups in the description of this episode so that folks can just easily click over and find a place to donate or to support. So another thought about COVID and the pandemic, what precautions are you and fellow organizers taking to ensure that social distancing can be followed during marches? I've noticed, like, in pictures, everyone's got a mask on. I think that's great. Well, what other steps are you encouraging folks to take?
Yeah, we definitely encourage folks to social distance. Of course, it could get a little bit hard when we get into close spaces on the streets. Or I guess when the streets are a little bit smaller, but we also have folks out there that have, we have hand sanitizer stations. We have runners that have hand sanitizers. We provide masks there as well. And we also have gloves that we provide. And so if folks need things to protect themselves, to make sure that they are clean and covered up, we do have those materials available. We usually have a table near the beginning of the entrance of our locations, and you could find those materials there right as you walk in, so that folks have what they need to feel protected from the virus.
That's great. Yeah, I appreciate the steps that y'all are taking to make that as, you know, easy as possible. Like, oh, you forgot your mask at home, here's one for you. Like, making sure everyone has a chance to feel safe while they're out there. This is a really interesting time to be in the labor movement. We hear a lot of union members speaking up about how labor can, I think, better rise to the occasion and strive for greater racial justice within our ranks. What advice or knowledge would you want to give to a union member who wants to see that type of change within our movement?
Yeah, I think it's time for unions to look inward. It's time for us to pause and think about how we can continue to better structure the union to center folks who have been marginalized the most. I would say, like, we need members to be talking to their presidents, to their council reps, to their organizers and fellow members, and ask the question, like, hey, what are we doing to advance our union in the fight for racial justice? Like what are the clear, like, everyone, I feel like everyone should have a clear set of goals and actions that their unions are doing to make sure that the very structure of the union is providing more inclusive and equitable space for folks who have been at the fringes of our society. And you know, we know that the folks in our unions, many of them are people of color, many of them are working class, many of them are doing a lot to fight for a better working place, and fighting against a lot of, like, I, the a lot of what comes with, you know, capitalism and the power dynamics of the bosses. And so there's a way, I think, to intersect all of it, right? It's definitely not easy. It's like no union is going to change overnight to become this, you know, perfect picture of what racial justice looks like. But I do know it begins with the hard conversations of looking inward and asking, like, what are we doing? What are we not doing? And holding each other accountable to whatever's decided. You know, we're all at different places, and I think folks have to respect that while also challenging where we're at.
Sure. That, you know, keeping in mind it's not going to change overnight, but without a plan, without incremental change, it will never change. That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, it's interesting, if you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics data, they release an annual report about union membership in America. The fastest growing segments of the labor movement, it's workers of color, it's especially young workers of color and folks with a working class background who joined a union because, you know, they want better wages, benefits, and working conditions. But I think it falls on the labor movement to ensure that we're being, you know, that we have that inclusivity that you're talking about. That's just really important stuff that we need to all reflect on at this time. And I mean, it's not just this time, it's something we should be always working and striving towards, in my opinion. I appreciate you sharing your perspective on that. So I do communications work, and I am kind of a news junkie. And one thing I've noticed, especially in Oregon, is as marches continue and, you know, get into day 12, day 15, day 20, the media doesn't always seem to follow the marches as closely as they were in the beginning of this movement. You know, a lot of times we see news cameras kind of veer towards the more extreme or more violent acts at protests and kind of latch onto that as their story. As opposed to covering the peaceful protests that typically are just exponentially bigger than whatever outlying violence is occurring. What's your take on that? I mean, how can we help tell the story of the movement, of the peaceful movement that's happening, if the press isn't really interested in it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I will say that, like, I've been at multiple of the protests, both where it's, you know, it's gotten a little bit heated and both where it's been pretty peaceful. Even when it's been heated, I have seen like an overuse of force by the police. So I will say that, like, I think it's a juicy story for, you know, reporters. At the same time, I don't really know what to say, because at the end of the day, like, I guess the movement doesn't necessarily always need the press, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we know our organizing strategy and what we need to win. I don't think we need the limelight constantly, but what we do need is like leadership, because I know for a fact that the media is paying close attention to, like, what Mayor Wheeler is doing, what Joanne Hardesty is doing, what, you know, the Multnomah County Commission will be doing, as well as a state. And so, we're starting to shift our strategy to be more engaged with decision makers and pushing them to get out a plan, because we know at the end of the day, this is a long-term conversation. More will have to come out of this moment than I think is being offered. So, I don't really know how to, like, make the press pay attention to all that, but my guess is that as we come out with more demands, as we come out with more proposals and working with decision makers to push them to a place that's closer to where we need them, you know, there's going to definitely be some changes that I think folks will want to pay attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that Rose City Justice, I mean, what'd you say, you have 20,000 Instagram followers, something like that?
Yeah.
That, I mean, I think you're doing a good job of telling your story that way too. It's, you know, you don't always need a reporter with a camera crew there to get the word out. I mean, 20,000 people, they're going to share it. That's, you know, that's a good way to get out your message as well. I like your perspective on that. I mean, it's, you know, when the media is there, great. If they're not, you know, we'll tell our story however we can. So last question, it's a light one. How do you get pumped up before a march or an action? Do you have a favorite song or a musician or artist that really gets you going?
That's a hilarious question. I don't have a favorite song. I definitely listen to a lot of Kendrick Lamar before I head out. I just feel like he's you know, he's a fellow Gemini. We're born in the same month, so I think one of the best rappers alive. So yeah, I'd listen to him a few times, I think, before going out. But really, it's what gets me the most excited is being able to engage with my friends as well, you know, because I think us going out all out together, like knowing that we have each other's backs, that's actually, I feel like that's been the most fun and gives me the most energy to just know that, you know, we're all kind of in this together right now, and feel like, you know, really, really grateful for that backup.
Yeah. Solidarity forever. Indeed. That's what it's all about. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today, Lamar. Really appreciate you joining us on the podcast and for all the work that you're doing, both for AFSCME and for Rose City Justice. Listeners, folks, please subscribe if you have not done so already on your podcast platform of choice, and make sure to share this episode on social media if you enjoyed it, and we will see you next month with another episode. Thank you so much for listening.